The Northwest Arkansas Naturals brought professional baseball to Northwest Arkansas 5 seasons ago. But more than 70 years before that, there was an entire professional league based in Northwest Arkansas. J.B. Hogan has been researching the league for years, and next year his book, Angels in the Ozarks, Professional Baseball in Fayetteville in the Arkansas State, Arkansas-Missouri League, 1934 to 1940, will be published. J.B. Hogan says it's hard to find many remnants of this league.
If you want to talk about this league, it's basically a forgotten league. But yes, we had, it's rough and tumble. That's the way I like to think of it. This is the old days. This was a Class D, the lowest minor league you could have. But it was professional. The Cardinals kind of took it under their wing at first, and then they wanted the individual towns to run it. But the Cardinals were overseeing it because this was, remember, this is when Branch Rickey is creating the minor league system. People remember Branch Rickey for Jackie Robinson, but he created the minor league system as well. That man, that's two genius ideas with one guy.
So we're talking the 1930s.
Yeah, the league existed from 1934 to 1940.
For people who don't know about baseball, when the minor league system was really at its heyday in its infancy, there wasn't just, as there is now, Class AAA, which is the next step below Major League's AA and single A.
Right.
You had Class B,
yeah,
Class C,
exactly.
And Class D.
And for part of 1943, you had Class E. And when I was a kid, I remember I only knew that because I had a baseball card. You might remember a guy, Frank Sullivan, real tall right-handed pitcher for the Red Sox. I think he's 6'7". He had pitched in that Class E league. It only lasted like a month or so. But there was actually a Class E league. I think it was about 62 when they reformed the minor leagues and got rid of all the lower levels.
Right.
And when they got rid of the lower levels, you got rid of, if you'll excuse this sort of thing, they got rid of guys like me. You know, guys that would just barely have enough skill to play at Class D. It's all, you know, prospects now.
Most of the people who are playing in Class D, whether it's in the Arkansas-Missouri State League or any of the other D leagues, are never going to make the majors.
No.
But they love the game.
Oh, absolutely. Love the game. Yeah, we did have some that made it to the majors, and lots of guys had longer careers in the minors. But, you know, that's a long way from Class D. Six levels just to get to the majors? That's really hard to do.
The teams that were in the Arkansas State League and the Arkansas-Missouri State League. And we're talking when the towns were Fayetteville, Springdale, they weren't big towns.
Well, Springdale was not in the league. They tried to get in the league. They were not in it. Springdale trying to get in the league forced Fayetteville's hand to get in the league. It was Fayetteville, Rogers, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs were the first four. Yeah, exactly. And all four towns together were less than 20,000 people. Closer to like, you know, 16 or 17,000 people all together in those four towns. It was considered at one time, and I think there's a good case for it, it was the smallest professional baseball league that ever existed.
Professional, that's
professional.
A key word
the here. Key word is, yeah, that's the key word. This is not semi-pro, you know, where you just, you know, catch as catch can, you just play. And I know my uncle played semi-pro ball when I was a kid. And one of the things they did, he played on the Mayfield team out here in the country. Guys would put change in a big bowl all year long. At the end of the year, the number one hitter would get two hands full, and that's what semi-pro is like. This is guys with actual contracts and salaries. They made the average salary in the Arkansas State, Arkansas-Missouri League was $25 to $35 a month, which in the Depression,
right,
it's at least a steady money, right?
Right.
And managers got around 50 to 75. And some of those guys would get more. There were player managers like Fred Hahn. And there were major leaguers. Men had been major leaguers like Ray Powell from Siloam Springs. He'd played for the Boston Braves. I can't quite remember the exact date, but I think it was like 1920. He played at Boston Braves against the Brooklyn Dodgers in the longest game at that time ever played. It was 26 innings long. And that Mr. Powell was on that. He was the Siloam Springs manager. I think he played some, but he was already older by the time the league was going.
So when the league starts, you've got these four teams.
Right.
And the nicknames, the mascots, are very interesting.
They're very interesting. They're almost silly. The Fayetteville were called, they had a contest, and the winning entry was the Educators.
Because of the university.
Because of the university, exactly. Now, the sports writers immediately figured out to call them the Eds, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Siloam Springs, they were strong. They were the Buffaloes. Bentonville was the Office Holders.
That is my favorite nickname ever.
Doesn't put much fear into an opponent, though,
no.
Does it?
No,
that's
but,
what I always got so tickled.
But they'll keep the score right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they got it. And then Rogers was a fun one. They started off as the Apple Knockers, which I had to look up, was apparently the equivalent of saying you're Hicks. You know, guys up there, and because apple field or what am I trying to say?
The orchards,
apple orchards. That was a big thing here at the time. So the guys knocking the apples down. I guess that so is a Hick. Anyway, somewhere in the middle of the year, they changed to the Rogers Rustler. So. And Fayetteville changed the very next year. They had another contest, and they said, educators won't do, and they became the Bears
and then later
in 1935.
And later they become the Angels.
Yes.
But they didn't mean to, necessarily.
No, they did not. They did not mean to be. This is a great story. Professor Walter Lemke wrote this in his little book, and he covered the league during his time. He wrote this story, and then Heather Sarunian, who I believe is Robert Henry of Siloam Springs, the owner of the team there, his granddaughter, I believe, she retold the story like in 88 or 98, something like that. And anyway, the bottom line is they inherited some uniforms. I think it was from Ponca City, and they said Angels on them, and they didn't have the money to unstitch those and put Bears on there, so they became the Angels.
They just said,
it's
okay,
you know, we're,
the Angels now.
Isn't that great? I just love that. Because the league was suffering. I mean, first of all, right smack in the Depression, right? They can barely survive. The teams barely survived every year. You know, they struggle to make it to the end every year.
They played a full schedule.
They did.
I mean, 120, 130 games.
Yeah, exactly. They would start off with around 120-game schedule. Sometimes they would cut short, like in 1934, they cut the second half short. So I think they got about 80, 90 games in. But, yeah, 100, they played a regular minor league schedule. And there, you know, a lot of travel and stuff.
Right.
And one of the more interesting things, I believe it was 1937, they were going to have a six-team league. They had moved up in 1935 to a six-team league. And in 37, they were going to have one. But one of the teams had dropped out, I think maybe like Bentonville. And they were going to use a town in Oklahoma. I can't think of its name right now. Oh, that's terrible. Anyway, that team bailed out the day before the season started, and so they had to redo the schedule with a five-team league. 1937 was a five-team league, so they had to do all kind of maneuver. Mr. Henry and someone worked on that and built that five-team league schedule.
So really someone's difficult. Always off.
Yeah, somebody's always off, and there were like double headers in different places, you know, and you might have two teams come into the same town, that kind of thing. It's very strange.
Would the teams travel together? If I was a Fayetteville educator and I was going to play the Apple Knockers and Rogers, yeah. Would we travel together?
No, to my knowledge, they did not. They had buses, like a school bus-looking thing that I saw that they traveled in. To my knowledge, they did not travel together.
Eventually, there's expansion. It becomes the Arkansas-Missouri State League.
Right. So in 34, we had the four teams in Northwest Arkansas. In 35, we added Huntsville and Monette, Missouri.
And I'm going to stop you right there because Huntsville is not really a big town now. So in the mid-1930s, the Huntsville Redbirds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just about everybody, every young eligible man in Huntsville probably had to be on that team.
Well, by 35, I don't know that anybody from Huntsville was actually on the
team.
They
just were the team.
By that time, I think we're getting structured minor league stuff. So there were Cardinal players basically.
Right.
You know, I think almost like up until at least 35, like everybody playing really belonged to the Cardinals.
Right.
So they could maneuver
around.
They just owned
the league.
They just owned the league. Right. Exactly. And then 36, Huntsville dropped out. I may have said that wrong. Could have been Cassville came in first. I'm sorry, I can't remember that. But then the other Missouri team came in, so you had Monette and Cassville. So then it became the Arkansas-Missouri League in 1936.
Now, you mentioned that the league, it's in the Depression, so there were times when they struggled. But there were some passionate fans.
Oh, yeah. They had built off of this the semi-pro around here, the town teams. The town teams, they used to draw thousands of people to them. But I think that was it was either free or whatever, because whenever they'd have a free night, you'd get a couple of thousand. But when you had to pay 25, 35 cents, it kind of cut down. But yeah, the fans were passionate.
Where would the teams play?
Well, the Fayetteville, the franchise, always played out at the fairgrounds out here. It's the intramural field now for the University of Arkansas. Siloam Springs played in Smiley Park up on top of the hill, and that ballpark's gone. I do not know where the other Huntsville and Rogers played, and I don't know where they played. I don't know where Bentonville was. It went to Neosho, no one knew. I know where Carthage plays because they had their municipal stadium, but and Monette and Cassville were so small. One of those, I think Cassville, Mr. Lemke describes them as having a cold water spring out in dead center field. So you could imagine the field be wet.
There are some famous alums from this league.
Yeah. I thought about this. I think the three most famous people coming out of here would be Sherman Lawler, who was the bat boy for the Bears and the Angels. Never a player in the league, but a bat boy. Sherman Lawler. Ralph Houk, who was a catcher, I think, for Rogers. I'm not sure about that, but he became really famous as the New York Yankee manager because it was his unfortunate luck to come up backing up Yogi Berra.
Right.
That's not going to happen, right? So, and then the other guy who was actually, I think, maybe the best player of all time was Walker Cooper, who played in the league under the name Tom, but it was him. It was whose brother was Mort. Remember they had the brother duo backstop and pitcher for the Cardinals for many years.
Right.
And the descriptions of Walker Cooper's home runs, you know, darts and things, I mean, just cannons. He was really strong and good.
What was it like researching this material? You have the columns and the coverage by Professor Lemke, not Professor Lemke yet, Walter J. Lemke.
Right, Walter J. Yeah.
What else could you get your hands on?
Okay, my primary source, because of this town, that's why I call it Fayetteville in the league, is Fayetteville is the only team that was in the league every year. Fayetteville was, until Carthage and Neosho came in there, they were the biggest town. They were the town with the daily. The other papers in the other towns, I looked at them, and the coverage is very difficult. So I read the newspaper, the Fayetteville Daily Democrat, every sports page from 1933 to 1940. That's number one. And then I would look around. Like, for example, I found a guy at the university did his master's thesis on the league, but he only did 34 and 35. If he'd have kept going the way he did in 1934, there would have been no reason for me to write this book. But he changed his approach in 1935 and then stopped. I also got some information from another master's thesis just about the era of the Depression, things like that. There are Professor Lemke, I keep calling that because that's why I'm used to calling him that. He wrote a really wonderful little booklet. It's only maybe 16 pages long or something, but it's done from his memory. And it's just really fun because he brought out all the highlights of the funny things, you know, what was it, like the five-holer, he called it, at the ballpark, the outhouse.
at the fairgrounds here.
At the fairgrounds. And he tells us stories about when a foul ball left the field, he said you could always tell the owners by the men that stood up to see where the ball went because they actually had games where they had to call them because they ran out of balls. It was so poor. Uniforms were so dirty that letters to the editor said they're just ashamed to see these guys playing in uniforms like that. It was just bare bones, just barely existing.
Any physical remnants left?
Yeah, very few. It's really sad because I'd go around to some of the towns, and to my knowledge, honest to goodness, I think off the top of my head, the only physical thing existing from the Arkansas State, Arkansas, Missouri League is Carl Luton Stadium in Carthage, Missouri, which used to be Municipal Stadium and was used by the Carthage Pirates in 38, 39, and 40. And I've got pictures of it, but I think to my knowledge, that's the only thing we...
We don't have an educator uniform. We don't have an Angels cap.
I've never seen anything like that. Now, here's one thing I want to keep in mind. This would be a good thing, and I haven't had a chance to go back in a while. I interviewed Robert Henry a couple of times. He was the owner of the Siloam Springs team, and before he passed away, and he was a very nice man, and he had these old scrapbooks. Unfortunately, he had taped everything in the book, but there's a lot of good information there about the league, but it's most of it newspaper clippings. But I got some things, including a contract. I made a photocopy of a contract of a Siloam Springs pitcher with the unfortunate name of Clint Raper.
Oh my.
Who was a tremendous pitcher. He won over 20 games one year for him. And so I've got his contract, that kind of thing. I made a photocopy of that. And Mr. Henry had some actual scorecards.
Oh, wow.
And a book. And I took a couple of photos of those. So I had a few things like – so they're in the Siloam Springs Museum now. And so there's some things like that in there to take a look at. That might be – I thought of it as a treasure trove, but you can't get them out
right.
So much. But It is one of the unfortunate things that there's so little evidence of it. You know, if I didn't have the sources I have, you would think I made the thing up.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you think about it, what little there is, if that wasn't there, this would just be
confined to
the dustbins of history.
It would be completely lost. And if you'll pardon me for a moment, that's my thing as a local historian. That's what I like to do. From this is the beginning of that. My favorite thing is to find what I call forgotten Fayetteville or anything forgotten and bring it back, because when you do that, you don't want to keep that history. You want to share it with everybody. And that's what I've done. And plus, sports fans know, and I know you understand that, it was so much fun to do this. I can't even tell you how many hours is involved here. Never one of them. Always good, honest to goodness. And I spent hours and hours and hours on microfilm reading them. I mean, I was living in Colorado. I had them send up, our Fayetteville Democrat and Northwest Arkansas Times papers, and I'd go through the microfilm when I was out of state. Huh. Longmont, Colorado, did the same thing up there, and I'd come home and do it here. And it was wonderful. I loved every second of it. And learned about this league was fantastic.
J.B. Hogan's book, Angels in the Ozarks, Professional Baseball in Fayetteville and the Arkansas State, Arkansas-Missouri League, 1930 to 1940, will be published next year. His latest work of fiction, titled The Apostate, has just been published.
Joe Lieberman served more than two decades in the U.S. Senate, became the vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party in 2000, and very nearly the Republican VP nominee in 2008. On his way out, he told the Daily Beast he didn't leave the Democratic Party so much as the party left him. I'm Neil Conan, an exit interview with Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.